Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. Thank you guys so much for listening and for your awesome feedback, and, you know, I just love you. Okay, so I was originally planning to do a case similar but not connected to the uterus collector of last week. And those two cases would have lined up as a similar theme, and I promised to come back to said unnamed case soon. But I got deep again, and I feel I'm getting closer and closer as I dig further and further into the Long Island serial killer and the connection with Amanda Winkowski, who, if you've listened to her episodes, I've become heavily invested in, and have been silently researching on the side until I can uncover more on what I believe to be a connection. It's just no coincidence the elements that line up in Amanda's case and the victims of the LISC case, which is an acronym for the Long Island serial killer, or killers. So if you hear me say LISC, that's L-I-S-K, that's what I'm referring to. I've covered Amanda's story and have alluded to my theory on the connection, but haven't revealed what I'm going to today, nor have I given you a basic rundown on the LISC case. So today, we are going to set the groundwork for what is to come and the foundation for what has already been discovered in the Long Island serial killer case. So, not only have I been in almost daily contact with Amanda's mom, staying up until all hours of the night speaking to her, which if it's 12:30 a.m. my time in Colorado, it's 2:30 a.m. for her in Buffalo, and I just don't know how she does it. But I must say, if my daughter was brutally murdered, I'd likely never sleep. Or at least not sleep until she got the respect and justice she deserved. So Leslie, I get it. And I love you so much, my friend. So with that being said, too much has come together for me not to report the update to you now. And I hope you all are as invested as I am. Actually, I don't expect that of you because there's no way you could be without the, you know, obsessive brain I have and the intimate connection to the case. But, you know, I know my listeners. I know you care. So please stay on this journey. And if you have any tips or anything that rings a bell on any episode I do regarding Amanda or the Long Island serial killer case, please email or DM me at sevendeadlysinnerspodcast@gmail.com and the same on Instagram, sevendeadlysinnerspodcast. Anyways, love you guys. And let's see if we can't help catch the bad guy or guys together. Before I reveal my interview with John Ray, lawyer for Amanda's case and her mother Leslie, and also the lawyer for a few of the Long Island serial killer victims, let me lay out the backstory for you in a shorthand version that I want to expand on more in future episodes. But there are other brilliantly produced podcasts that dedicate a full season or full podcast to LISC that I'd recommend listening to. One is called LISC, hosted by Chris Mass, who does an incredible job. And then there's Unraveled by Alexis Linkletter and Billy Jensen, whom they bring a different and fascinating and also heartbreaking perspective, as Alexis has a personal connection through a high school friend to the case. So I encourage you to listen to both. I want to go into more of these beautiful girls' backstories in the future, but for now, my goal is to connect Amanda to this case, to open up any leads that can help solve Amanda's case, and also hopefully open up new avenues and leads for the families of the 10 other victims of this potential monster or monsters operating around the Long Island area. It's an open case and all parties are innocent until proven guilty. Except, well, one of them is already in prison for murdering two women and strongly suspected of one more and likely of others. But this happened in the 90s. However, he wasn't caught until after all of the other bodies of the women and one man and one toddler associated with Long Island serial killer were found. This is the first episode going in-depth on the Long Island serial killer backstory and the potential connection to Amanda Winkowski's tragic murder and potential cover-up or just basic mishandling by authorities that should have been protecting her. The discovery of 10 bodies and partial remains scattered throughout the Long Island area started with one phone call to 911 from a frantic Shannon Gilbert. A gorgeous sex worker who'd been driven to Long Island to meet a client by her driver, Michael Peck. And when I say gorgeous, she was gorgeous. She wasn't without her struggles, but who among us doesn't struggle? But regardless of her life choices or potential mental illness, though I believe that had been largely debunked, a human is a human. I don't care what she did for a living. I don't care if she got emotional one too many times. And I don't care if she dabbled in drugs. Go ask your college roommate if they have, or maybe you have yourself. No one deserves the fate that that poor girl was met with. So please keep that in mind. I trust you are all good people, though, but I just wanted to say that because Shannon can't speak for herself now. So, stay with me. In the aftermath of Shannon's disappearance and then discovery of her body, her family has been marred with even more devastation. And something I just discovered while researching more about Shannon and her family that I'm not willing to speak upon unless I'm covering a full episode on Shannon. I just want you to know it gets more tragic and this family deserves respect. I feel extremely shocked by what I just read while wrapping up this script. Maybe don't Google it. It's going to break your heart. But Shannon deserves a full episode herself. I just want to say that. And rest in peace, pretty girl. But I'm going to honor Shannon in the most respectful way possible. And I'm going to allow you to hear her own words the night she made that fateful 911 call. And then I will continue on with the story of Lisk, two potential suspects that I believe could be connected. The call I had with attorney John Ray and Leslie, Amanda Winkowski's mom. And then I will end on another potential suspect. But first, here's the timeline of events.
This video was made to explain the circumstances surrounding the three 911 calls made on the day Shannon Gilbert went missing. The full, unedited 911 calls are available, and I encourage people to listen to them in their entirety. During the early morning hours of May 1st, 2010, Shannon Gilbert, a Craigslist sex worker and resident of Jersey City, New Jersey, traveled from Manhattan to meet a client, Joseph Brewer, at his home at 8 The Fairway, Oak Beach, New York. Shannon was driven to Oak Beach from Manhattan by her driver, Michael Peck. Neither one was familiar with the area, neither one had been there before, and neither one had met Brewer before. Peck waited in the car while Shannon was inside with Brewer. Peck was her de facto security. At 4:51 a.m., while at Brewer's house, Shannon called 911. This call lasts for more than 21 minutes. At times, Shannon is speaking calmly, but slurring her words. At times, she is not responsive, and at times, she is screaming.
The event that set the discovery of 10 human remains was this. Shannon Gilbert was driven to a client's house in Oak Beach, Long Island, a private gated community, to a home where a man named Joseph Brewer lived. A source created by the Suffolk County Police called GilgoNews.com describes the events that followed like this. On May 10, 2010, Shannon Gilbert fled the home of Joseph Brewer, a client she had traveled by way of her driver Michael Peck to meet from Manhattan to Brewer's home in Oak Beach. Michael claims he stayed in the car outside until Brewer asked him to come retrieve Shannon. Michael went inside, per his words, but Shannon did not want to come out. He eventually went back to his car and waited when he saw Shannon flee out of Brewer's home and down the street, eventually knocking on two neighbors' doors, which we will hear their 911 calls shortly as well. Michael Peck lost track of her, and eventually her missing persons case, championed and fought for by her mother and family to keep the police from disregarding their daughter, led them to discover other victims. Shannon would not be found until 18 months after her disappearance. But what she did uncover was, I believe, kind of a beautiful legacy for her tragic death. They found 10 other victims because of that fateful 911 call. I hate to keep stating that, but that's the truth. So Shannon flees, calls 911. Then the order of the timeline in the simplest form goes like this, and you can view GilgoNews.com to read it more in depth, but I'm sort of working backwards here. Shannon is still missing, but the search continued. And on December 11, 2010, 8 months after the search for her began, a Suffolk County Police Department canine unit uncovered human remains that were not Shannon, but another young woman named Melissa Bartholomew. And please keep that name in mind, as that will be one of the major connections to Amanda Winkowski's case. So they did not find Shannon dead or alive, but instead happened upon 24-year-old Melissa Bartholomew. Then just 2 days after discovering Melissa's remains, they came across three other victims along Ocean Parkway. Maureen Barnes, 25, Amber Costello, 27, and Megan Waterman, 22. All were working as sex workers, all very similar in size and stature and age, and all very similar to Amanda. They were tiny, petite, and young, some under 5 feet, some only around 100 pounds, and a type seemed to form. All young women were last seen between July 2007 and September 2010. Amanda went missing in December 2008 and was found murdered upside down in a residential trash bin in January 2009. Again, tell me that's an accidental overdose, but such it was ruled. But let me also state that many of these girls who were found murdered in Long Island were also brought there from places like Buffalo and even had their home base there. And keep this in mind. Amanda was friends with Melissa Bartholomew and worked with her. The same Melissa who was the first whose remains were found in the Long Island serial killer case. In the interest of not making this episode too long and to keep the facts as concise as possible, I'm going to go into Shannon's 911 calls and then the conversation I had with the attorney for victims' families of the Liss case and Amanda's case, John Ray. And at the end, I'll present my theories on the suspects I mentioned, and next week we will reveal more of the findings based on the phone records Leslie, Amanda's mom, has provided me. But now, here's Shannon Gilbert, heartbreakingly trying to get away from the man or men she believes are trying to harm her.
State Police, Trooper Fry. State Police.
Yeah, there's somebody after me.
I'm sorry?
There's somebody after me.
Where are you?
There's somebody after me.
Okay, where are you?
There's somebody after me.
Where are you, ma'am?
I don't know.
You're driving right now?
No, I'm inside the house.
I'm sorry?
I'm inside the house.
What house?
I don't know. Can you trace where I am?
I'm sorry?
Can you trace where I am?
No, I can't. What's your callback number you're calling from?
Huh?
What phone number are you calling from?
Somebody's after me. Please.
Are you in Suffolk County or Nassau County?
I'm in Long Island.
Where on Long Island are you?
No. 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 No, stop, no.
Where in Long Island are you? In Suffolk County? Nassau County?
Huh? Why? Why are you calling me by my name? Why?
County, you on the line?
Stop. Please. Stop it, please. Please, stop. Please, can you shut the door?
No, time to go.
Please. Please. Please!
Know that word, please. Come on, let's go. Come on, world genocide, suicide. Come on, world genocide. Come on, all of us. Come on, world genocide. Come on.
No, please.
What happened? Hello?
Please, get me out of here, please.
Hello?
You're being sarcastic about this. You were part of this all along.
I have met him just now.
Shannon then ran from Brewer's house at 8 the fairway to Gus Coletti's house at 17 the fairway, a distance of 0.2 miles. Shannon interacts with Coletti. He invites her inside his home.
Shannon.
She then runs from Coletti's home, prompting Coletti to call 911. After Coletti's call, Shannon then runs another 0.2 miles to another home at 43 the Bayou, prompting a third 911 call made at 5:30 a.m. by Barbara Brennan.
Southern Police, 873, what's the location of your emergency?
Yes, I live at Oak Beach in the Association. There's a young girl about 14 years old running around here screaming, and there's some guy trying to follow her.
What's the address there?
I'm at 17 the Fairway.
All right. Do you have a description of the girl or the boy?
Pardon me?
Do you have a description of the girl or the boy?
The girl is about 14 years old, got blonde hair, very small. The boy, I can't tell. He was in like a Suburban.
What color?
Black.
Did you happen to get a plate number or any
phone? No, I didn't.
Okay, telephone number you're calling from?
4.
Are they still on the fairway?
They just went past the gatehouse where the entrance is.
And what's the name of the complex?
It's Oak Beach Association.
Okay.
Out by Robert Moses.
All right, we got somebody over there.
I'll be watching.
Oh, okay.
Bye.
Suffolk Police, 875. What is the location of your emergency?
4043 The Bayou. Some woman is knocking at my door.
What town are you in?
Oak Beach Association.
What's the nearest corner street, though?
Ocean Parkway. She says she's in danger.
Do you know her or no?
No, I don't. I'm not letting her in.
She's banging on your door now?
Yes.
Did she say what kind of danger?
No.
Okay.
And we live in a gated community.
What's your name, ma'am?
Barbara Brennan.
Was there a name to that community?
Oak Beach Association.
Oak Beach Association.
And I have an elderly mother here.
All right, I'll get somebody right over there, okay?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's so haunting that you can hear Shannon knocking on her door in that phone call. But I also feel for that woman for being scared and not wanting to answer. It's all just so tragic. I then spoke to John Ray, lawyer for many of the Long Island serial killer victims, and Leslie Amanda Winkowski's mom, and it seems that John Ray and I share the same sentiment. Here's an excerpt from that interview.
Good afternoon, John Ray and Associates.
Hi, could I please be connected to John Ray again? I called just a second ago.
Sure, hold on one moment.
Thank you.
Hi, it's John Ray again.
Hey. All right, it's Rachel. I'm hoping that when I add Leslie, it won't hang up the recorded thing. Sometimes it does that. Leslie, are you there? Perfect. John, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Okay, it worked. Okay, it worked this time.
Okay.
Okay. So, basically, Leslie has told me that from the beginning, you thought that Amanda could be a victim of the Long Island serial killer. Or killers. Which I think it's a few people. I don't know what you think. What do you think on that?
I'm more inclined to think it's a few people, and they're related to each other in some way. They're not. They're not coincidental.
Yes. Do you think? So okay, I'll just give you my theory, and then you can tell me what yours is. My theory is that there are the pimps. Whether it be the Romeo Sims that the girls think they're dating them or, you know, regardless. There are the guys like Antoine Garner or Tank or I guess I'll just speak freely. A lot of them seem to be black men. I that's not meant racist, but seems that way. We're providing the wealthier or well-connected white men of Long Island and elsewhere. In California too, they could have been trapped in many places. We're providing them with these girls, and I think that I don't know if I think that the pimps were killing him or the white. I don't know. I think Jimmy Burke I think is a monster. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, first, I just thinking on the issue of race that the industry itself, the sex worker industry, has it built into it a definitive, or maybe I should say emphatic, system that. It willfully discriminates against black people in that the black sex workers are more, they're not treated as well as the white ones, and the workers themselves are told to avoid black men in their, you know, as their customer base. So those things are real. They happen. And so race is a real issue, and it's much more so than in, say, another kind of employment. So that's something that sidebar, but it might be considered in all of these things.
Yeah.
The idea that this is connect. This the death of Amanda is connected with the deaths of the workers in Long Island. Comes about because of the amazing coincidental connection between Amanda, Leslie, mm-hmm. myself, and the Long Island serial killer workers, because I'm involved as the lawyer for some of the victims' mm-hmm. Families in Long Island. And by coincidence, I took on Leslie's case through other people, Leslie's daughter's case, through other people who knew Leslie in Buffalo. And I had no idea that one case was connected to the other. I just happened to work on both of them. And when I worked on Amanda's and Leslie and I put our heads together, we realized that there was a link in many ways, but a very direct link in that the one of the Long Island serial killer girls was Melissa Barthelemy, and mm-hmm. she was a worker with Amanda in Buffalo, and she was also one of the girls killed in Long Island. So there, that connection mm-hmm. is real.
Yeah.
And then there are other connections as well, but that's the main connection. So you start with that. You know, whether we conceive of a group of people who caused these deaths in Long Island, or whether it came from the trade, the industry that they're mm-hmm. in, and what are known as the guerrillas, and what are also mm-hmm. known more traditionally as the pimps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, but it certainly looks that way. One of the missing links, however, on Long Island is the link between the pimps, several of whom are African American, and the white users, the white purchasers of the services. And there we have sort of a disconnect, but not necessarily. We're looking for the things that the synapses that put them closer together. We know that, for example, that some of the pimps of the girls from Buffalo worked Long Island, and
mm-hmm.
they worked with white people on Long Island, white customers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a crossing over there. We also know that some of the pimps of the girls who were dead worked Long Island, as well as other areas. So there is something of a connection. We also know that Chief Burke, of the former chief of the Suffolk County Police Department, had a predilection for black girls, and one of his girls.
I did not know that.
Yeah, one of his girls, his favorite girl, his most favorite girl, was Loretta Rickenbacker, who was an alleged sex worker in Amityville on Long Island, where he mm-hmm. saw her plying her trade and hooked up with her, and it was because of her, she's an African-American lady, it was because of her that he got in trouble twice for...
Oh, that's the one, it ran in the newspaper, like it was a headline story, and he still got elected.
Well, appointed, yeah.
Appointed, yeah.
Yeah, but he allowed her to have his gun by accident, allegedly, but... She drove around in his car with his gun and his police-issue gun, as well as on another occasion, and he got busted in rank because of that. He also had a child with her, and he's very much connected there, and indeed, he apparently was also detained in Brooklyn in a African-American neighborhood soliciting sex workers. There, so
interesting.
Yeah, so there are connections. I'm not sure where they all end up.
Well, do you think there's something to the fact that like Antoine Garner, for example, got a fairly light sentence for what he did and got away with a lot of stuff? Do you think it's possible that, like, because normally because our system tends to be kind of terrible, they throw the book at, you know, African American or any minority. You know, they're these guys, because they're connected to these white Johns, are getting like lighter sentences, and like there's a lot of favors going on. Does that ring true to you or no?
It depends, I think. I don't want to give you a wishy-washy answer, but it really does depend. I mean, it depends, first of all, on the arrests made. You know, what were the arrests for? And, you know, were the consequences of the arrest, the ultimate guilty plea, in most cases, were they commensurate with the normal process of plea bargaining to a certain level from the charge that was originally brought? Or do they appear to be favors, and that there's a pattern of that? I don't know the answer to that. I didn't really study that. But I keep hearing that it's true, but I don't know if it is. That's where I would look. And, of course, if there's probably a rare example of somebody going to trial on this. I don't know of any, but and that might change my answer. But, I don't know of any. So.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. Now, you, I guess when you spoke to Leslie earlier, or Leslie, when you spoke to Kiki, Shannon Gilbert was sent to California perhaps around the same time on the same trip with Amanda. Correct, Leslie?
Yeah.
But do you know anything about Shannon also going to California and like one of the gorillas that would have sent her there at the same time as Amanda?
I can't say that. What I can say is this. I knew nothing about the connection, if any, between Shannon and the girls in California. The nice lady who's helping us out, Titi, she enlightened me about what was going on in California, which I only spoke to her through Leslie about a week or so ago. So that's all new. What's not new to me is that Shannon did go to California. She made an unusual trip to California, in the months before she died, disappeared and died. And we don't know why. It was unusual. We couldn't figure out why she flew out to California. We knew that she had aspirations to be an actress and to be a singer. So we thought maybe, you know, she found something out there, or she tried something out there to look around for. But we never connected her with gorillas or the larger larger businesses in sex
trafficking, I guess. I mean,
the larger traffickers. We had no idea that was involved. And now I think that's something we have to look into. Now that I've learned this from Titi, that there was this operation that apparently also connected with Amanda. I don't know if Melissa ever went to California, Melissa Bartholomew, or not, but Shannon certainly did go there just months before she died. And more than that, I don't know where she went. We don't know why she went, but she went. So
I think that Titi would be able to tell me, because she told me where she or the pimp that was, working with them there had taken her, and I just need to get a hold of Titi again to confirm and figure out too if that's where Shannon went as well.
Sure.
But because that could help link the.
Oh, that would be an amazing connection if that could be made.
Well, you want to hear something even worse than that? One picture shows up here when Amanda is found. It's one picture of her in a bikini, and it's absolutely beautiful. Kiki said it's the pictures they were taken in California, but how would only one show up here, and who took them, and why?
Where are you saying it showed up where? Like on a website or what?
Just sent to me out of nowhere.
Like texted or like messaged to you, like on...
I don't know.
Social media?
Social media.
That is strange. No, I believe that they do get, because a lot of the stuff I've researched too is they would go on these websites too called like Model Mayhem, and I was also signed up for that a long time ago. And I was the worst model ever because I would just eat a cheeseburger before because out of spite. But they would get a lot of these pimps would get girls off of those websites because they had aspirations of, you know, being, you know, model, and then they just slowly lured them into like trafficking. I wouldn't be surprised if she did go out there with that hope.
See? And so, John, the both girls, Shannon and Amanda, are thinking they're going there for a great job or something.
Yeah, for modeling of some kind. That's. I think I'm not sure if we surmised it or we heard it originally that Shannon had a modeling career that she was going out there for, but I think I'm pretty sure that was said, you know, so, but I, you know, more than that, I didn't know.
That would not be that hard to fall into something like that. Really wouldn't.
But Shannon came home from there, so I'm not sure what happened.
But so did Amanda.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then once they're in, they can't get out, right?
Right.
They either are killed or, you know,
That's it. That's what Titi told us. You're in to stay. They're not letting you leave. And Amanda told me that when she called me from California, that she wanted to come home, that she was scared to death. Scared to death. And I don't know what could have scared her so bad.
Which is what sounds like what happened to Shannon when she left Brewer's house. I mean, I don't think she was on hard drugs. I think she just was terrified. What do you think about that?
Well, first things first, there's no evidence that she was bipolar other than her boyfriend saying so and that she had been that years before. And
really?
Yeah,
so like
we checked her hospital
no medical records of it?
Yeah, we checked her hospital records in New Jersey where she lived. To see if she
no
had...
No way, New Jersey?
What's that?
New Jersey?
Yeah, she lived in Jersey City, New Jersey. And
isn't that where Tanks has property there?
In Jersey City?
Yes.
Well, that's interesting. We're doing a lot of tracing of the pimps' properties. We found some really interesting connections, not just in Jersey, but also in... by I think what's called Mount Holyoke Hospital, I think that might be in Massachusetts, and that some of the pimps own properties all in the same area up there, so it's kind of interesting. But if he owned property in Jersey City, that doesn't surprise me because Shannon worked that area, in fact got busted at one point in a ring that worked that area, which is one reason why she turned to New York rather than Jersey. Continue her work. But I think I was saying that, what was I saying about New Jersey? That she lived there. And where were we going with that? I forgot.
I think her not having no medical records of her.
Oh, medical records, sorry. Yeah, and we checked her medical records in the local hospitals and there were none. She was apparently never admitted for any bipolar treatment at all. Second point is that there's no evidence that Shannon was drugged, none whatsoever. That's a surmise made by a variety of people, including the police. It's sheer surmise. There's the only evidence of any drug use at all would have been taken from Shannon's a mat of a piece of Shannon's hair that was found. And they would test it, and she did not have drugs in her system, in her hair. Now, that hair sample would not have been affected by the night that she disappeared. So if she had taken drugs that night, it would not have turned up in her hair. But nonetheless, there's no evidence that she was on drugs at that point. And her boyfriend or driver saying that, she would use cocaine with her customers is not only standard, but that depends on the customer, doesn't it? And there's no evidence that she even used cocaine. Now, cocaine wouldn't have made her crazy. And she wasn't crazy. She wasn't in the least bit crazy. She wasn't disoriented. None of that is true when you take the whole case, the entire circumstances of the tape and the surrounding circumstances from other evidence we have. Shannon Gilbert did exactly what any girl would do in the same situation. She was given a Sophie's choice. She had to either run outside the house of Brewer, the John, and escape what she thought was coming, which was murder. And she actually said so. And she and go outside in the dark where she believed were other people awaiting her, or stay in the house and hope that she could get the police to find it and show up before she got killed indoors. So what do you do when you have a Sophie's choice like that? You do what she did. You risk and you bolt. And that's what she did. So
it's the same thing.
And side note, it appears Joseph Brewer has been cleared of involvement, but there's no escaping a finger pointed at one John Bitroff, in my mind. He might not be the one that did the deed, but he might be one of a group of men, or he might not be involved at all. But since he's in prison for a similar offense, or offenses, I think it's more than appropriate to discuss him. I'll lay his story out after the 911 calls and the partial interview with lawyer John Ray, and more will be aired on that in the future episodes. So here is John Bitroff's story. John Bitroff was a married father and husband when he was arrested. In July 2014, he was charged with the murders of Rita Tingretti and Colleen McName. And he's also the suspect in the murder of a third woman, Sandra Castilla. John became a suspect in the unsolved murders after his brother, Timothy, was partially matched to DNA found on the bodies in 2013. Timothy submitted the sample after violating an unrelated order of protection in 2013. And on July 5th, 2017, John was found guilty of second-degree murder of Tingretti and McName, and he was sentenced to 50 years to life in prison on September 12, 2017. And he is imprisoned at Clinton Correctional Facility. His department identification number is listed, but I'm not gonna post that, though I may make a call. Contact. We'll see what happens. Anywho, that's my journey. So John is convicted of killing these two women. He's suspected in the third, but authorities believe that he has killed many, many more. And think about the timeline. He is charged in 2014, finally found guilty in 2017. All of the girls I have mentioned, including Amanda, went missing and their bodies were found before 2014, for the most part. Just think about it, okay? And he lived in Manorville, Long Island. Now, here's where the connection gets kind of scary, okay? So I have not mentioned these two victims yet. I will go into them in the next episode, okay? But there are two other girls whose remains were found at two separate times, Jessica Taylor and Valerie Mack, okay? So John Bitroff was a carpenter who lived in Manorville, Long Island, okay? After John's sentence, the case prosecutors announced that John was also a suspect in at least one of the 10 murders attributed to the unidentified Long Island serial killer in New York's Suffolk and Nassau counties. The DA's office prosecutor, Robert, released a statement noting that John was likely responsible for the deaths of other women and that, quote, there are remains of the victims at Gilgo that may be attributed to the handiwork of Mr. Bitroff and that investigation is continuing, end quote. John Bitroff was a carpenter who lived in Manorville, where the torsos of Jessica Taylor and Valerie Mack were recovered. I have not gone into their cases yet, but I will in a future episode. The remains were discovered roughly 3 miles away from Bitroff's home. He also reportedly once, quote, cut out the heart of a deer he had just shot and ate it raw in the woods, end quote. And then here's where Amanda could come in. And once I go through the rest of her phone records, which takes a lot of time because I click on, okay, this person is that phone number associated to, and then it goes to the people associated with that phone number. It's a rabbit hole. And then I call Leslie, and then she's like, oh my God, that name, that's a name that rings a bell. And yeah, we're working on it. So please stay with us. And a further link between Bitroff and the Long Island serial killer case is this. One of John's victims, Rita Tangredi, had an adult daughter who reportedly was best friends with Melissa Bartholomew, the first victim discovered at Gilgo Beach after Shannon Gilbert's 911 call spurred the detectives to look for her and then found 4 other bodies within days. Melissa's mother also reported that Melissa had, quote, a lot of calls to Manorville from her phone at the time. But get this, Melissa was also friends with Amanda Winkowski. And according to Leslie, Amanda's mother, Melissa sometimes used Amanda's photo when she posted on said sex worker websites like Craigslist or Backpage. I don't think Melissa was doing anything malicious. I think it was just the industry they were in. But I also don't believe that coincidences like this happen for no reason. And I also believe there's more. And just wait until, well, you hear about the former chief of the Suffolk County Police, James Burke. He's a real gem. But until next week, I love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star rating and positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. See you next week.